Welcome to Direct Design Point, an interactive and live program with a top newsmaker in location technology. Hi, my name is Joe Francica. I'm the editor-in-chief of Directions Media, and I'm joined by Adina Schutzberg, our executive editor. We'll be your host today for a webcast featuring Arnulf Crystal, president of the Open Source Geospatial Foundation and the founder of Metaspatial. Arnulf, welcome. Glad to have you on Point today.
Nice to be here, Joel. Thank you.
Okay, just a brief background on Arnulf. He is, as I mentioned before, the president of the Open Source Geospatial Foundation, OSGEO. He was a founding and charter member of OSGEO and serves on their board of directors. He's also elected to the list of OSGEO Spanish charter members, and he contributes to a number of committees within OSGEO. He's also the president and founder of his own company called Metaspatial. So, Arnulf, I thought what we'd do just to start is really just simply perhaps stating the mission of OSGEO. I know we got some questions from audience members that may be confused about what the mission is, and maybe just what you think are some of the major achievements of OSGEO so far.
The mission of OSGEO is to support open source software, and the goal is to encourage the use and collaborative development of community-led projects. So the idea started in 2005, or probably even before that, when the user community, this unknown beast, started to ask for an organization that represents the open source community somehow more visibly. And in 2005, the Map Server Foundation was started on a somewhat unlucky initial step. By the map server community, or the developers of the map server, and a few companies, including Autodesk. After that, the foundation was started in February, and I think that one of the major achievements since that is that OSGEO has become the unique point of information for open source geospatial software without actually wanting to be that. Like, this community just started up and said, hey, there's nobody doing this, so let's do this. And if anybody else comes along, we don't try to be better or bigger or faster or try to eat them, but just offer them to cooperate. And that was the perfect way to do this. So there's many communities now. Some of them are incubated. That means they have gone through a quality process of checking the code, checking the community, the governance, the open source license, and whether everything is up to speed. But also projects that are just loosely associated and also get distributed on the OSGEO Live DVD, which is a more recent undertaking, which bundles all of this open source geospatial software on one DVD that you can boot in your computer directly or use it in a virtual machine or just install it on your computer.
You know, one of the questions we had from the people who registered, and maybe we should sort of at the outset make this clear, there was some confusion about what's OGC, what's OSGEO, what's the difference between open source and open standards. And in our conversation before we came on, you were talking about a white paper that's going to be released between the two organizations. Maybe you could just go over that for our attendees to make sure that everybody's clear about what the difference is between the two organizations.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit unfortunate that many organizations use open in their name nowadays, and you never really know what it is. So Open Source Geospatial Foundation and Open Geospatial Consortium, it's pretty easy to confuse those two just by the name. The important thing is that, let's start the other way around. When the organization was founded, I was actually one of those who wanted to call this organization FOSS4G, which would be free and open source software for geospatial, which is quite a mouthful, but probably more exact than just Open Source Geospatial Foundation. So one of them, and you'll talk to Mark Reichert next week, and he'll get more detail to explain this, is about standards and how standards get developed. So they don't develop software, they develop standards. And they do this in an open and collaborative way. That means that you can download and use the specification of the standard without having to pay a royalty fee cost. And it's being produced in a community, and before the standard gets official, there's a comment period, which is public so that anybody in the public can look at the standard and comment if something's wrong or he thinks that something needs to be changed. OSGeo, on the other hand, is all about software and educating how to use the software and in supporting access to open data. So that's more the doing of things. It's not the theory of how to do these things, but actually doing them. So the relation between OSGeo and OGC is that obviously a lot of the software of OSGeo implements OGC standards. If they're good and if they're being used by others, why not just use them for the software? It makes sense to be interoperable. So that's the close tie between the OGC and OSGeo. And to underline this, a few years back we have also signed a memorandum of understanding where we actually formulate what the relationship between OSGeo and OGC is. And because all of this still is not enough to explain to people what the difference is and how we relate, we're now about to publish a white paper on the definition of open in the OGC and in OSGeo. So there we will precisely and concisely explain what's the mission and the goals of OGC, what's the mission and the goals of OSGeo, and in what aspect do they relate to each other.
Okay, yeah, great. I think that's hopefully fairly clear to the audience members. Dina, do you want to follow up with any question?
Let's dive in a little bit more into some of the successes. I mean, certainly it took some time for the organization to get going and get settled on what the vision is and to get the first couple of projects up and running. And it sounds like this the CD is something that was really an achievement, that there is now a physical CD of all the software that can be distributed. What other things would you put into that category of successes?
Well, one big thing is the conference, which also is something that has existed before the foundation of OSGeo, but which is now an integral part of the whole organization. That's Phosphor-G. That's the free and open source software for geospatial. And this conference attracts around 500 to 1,000 people every year and is wandering around the world. So it was already in Ottawa, Minneapolis, Victoria, Sydney, South Africa, and Barcelona. And this year, for the first time in a long time, is going to be in the U.S., actually in Denver. And that's probably the place to go. So that's a big achievement of OSGeo to have this conference. And also the way that this conference is run, it's more in an open and community-driven process. So it's not just a commercial event where people get to show off their newest products. It's about what you can do with those products. There's many use cases and many users of the software and of other software and producers of data get a chance to chat about and present what they have been doing. Another interesting aspect about OSGeo is that the organizational structure is really thin. It's not a big thing. It's a fairly small organization. When you look at the hierarchical structure, there's just one employed and paid person. So me in my role as president, I do this as a volunteer. And we have this guy to sign contracts and talk to lawyers if this is necessary, if there's problems with trademarks or problems with licenses in the software packages that we are a roof and umbrella to. But beyond this, there are many local chapters of OSGeo. So currently there is over 40 local chapters, and 20 of them are locally incorporated. That means that they do the same thing as OSGeo, but on a local level, for example, in Germany, in Italy, in Chile, a most recent one, in India, in Japan, Australia. So there's many local chapters who support the same mission as OSGeo and understand themselves as a local chapter to the global organization OSGeo. And when you look at it from this perspective, then OSGeo is really big. There are several thousand people who are active in OSGeo, And there's legal representations in more than a dozen different cultures and nations and also languages. And from this perspective, OSGU is quite a beast. So the interesting thing is that it's not a big hierarchical, like in a corporation one would expect to exist, but it's more a distributed architecture. And then we're right back to the spatial data infrastructure idea that has been growing over the past years.
Well, I want to follow up by going back to the idea of the conferences. And you and I actually met at one of these early open source, I think it was a MapServer conference in Ottawa in 2005, back a million years ago. And I remember back then, the software that we were talking about when we talked about open source software was MapServer and Grass. And now we're talking about a whole different set of projects. And I was wondering if you could tease out maybe what's changed in the software that we're making or that we're using back from 2005 up until today.
Well, MapServer is still around and kicking and is still one of the fastest map server that you can get, so it's a cool thing. But it's been there are many new packages, and they come in different flavors and in different ways to produce them. So as an example, there's this desktop GIS. There's two versions of it. One is called Quantum GIS. It's implemented in C++, and the developers are distributed all around the world. And the other implementation is GBSIG, which is a project which has been funded largely by the Spanish municipality of Valencia. So very different ways of producing the software, and one is Java and the other is C++. So if you look at the products that have come out of them, both of them are really great. So one interesting aspect is that you still need to choose which of them you actually want to use in your production system, but both of them are really good to use. So that's the traditional GIS desktop market. And then obviously there are lots of other things. I think in back then in 2005 or 6 when it was, there was the year of birth of OpenLayers, which is a JavaScript library which has more or less conquered the whole world. Most websites that use OpenStreetMap will automatically also use OpenLayers as a presentation engine. And so from the JavaScript library through the desktop GIS, obviously the initial impulse from the map server community, all these software packages, they have matured a lot. And currently, I don't think there is many areas left in the geospatial domain that cannot be addressed by an open source software.
And so I think that brings up an interesting question, and I'm sure many people have asked you this, which is, if I'm implementing open source, do I have to choose between my existing proprietary solutions and chuck all of that and then go completely open source? And maybe what you're seeing now is more or less this hybrid environment between a proprietary solution and an open source solution, and maybe you can give your perspective on how those two can work more in tandem.
Yeah, well, this is another aspect where OGC comes into play, because they have these standards and they have them for many years, and it seems like that was the right thing to do, to follow those standards and be able to integrate proprietary software systems, legacy systems that have been around for 10, 15 years in an organization, where people know how to use it, and not just have to decide to not use this anymore and move immediately over to open source. No, it's different. If you have a new work area that you need to address, then you can choose what to do. You're on the green pasture. There's nothing there, and in those cases, you can just start to use open source, and eventually you will probably notice that it's a good choice. And then you can look back at what you have been doing for the past years and check whether some of those open source solutions can also be used as a replacement. So next time your license fee comes up, you may wonder if an open source solution is not a good option.
certainly feels like there's more interest now of interaction between the proprietary software sellers and developers and the open source community. And certainly we've seen a lot more participation and opening up of software by organizations like ESRI. How's that going? How's that, those relationships going?
Well, I think in my personally, obviously, highly biased opinion, the future will be open source anyway. So it's just a question of time, how long you're going to be able to maintain the old business model. Because proprietary software is not really a way of developing software, it's a way of making business. And this way of business is just coming out of use. And it just takes some time for people to understand what this open source thing is about. It's maybe it can be compared to the appearance of the apps on the mobile phones. Nobody thought about apps on the mobile phones 5 years back, and now everybody is making money off little apps that cost $2 or $3, which is a completely different business model. So I think the proprietary vendors, as you might want to call them, they see that there is it's not only a threat by open source, but it's also a chance. And they're starting to invest into this idea and trying hard to understand how they can incorporate this into their own organization, because it's a good thing and everybody is using it, so that's out of question by now. And my perception is that the larger the organization is, the harder it is to change to a more open source style of doing things. So in Germany, which is my home base, there's quite a few companies, GIS service providers between, I don't know, 5 and 50 or 100 employees who have started to adopt open source as their own back office software a long time ago. And now they start to also use the open source implementations for their own open source, for their own GIS software. And this is something that probably in the US is different, because the development has not been so obvious there. In Germany, I think there has been more activity around this. And so, but if your company, if you have 5,000 employees and only 300 of them is the core developers, and the rest is around organizing the whole company and retail and distribution of the software, then how are you going to adopt open source business models, which are more about service providing and training and maintenance and support and developing software? So anybody in a larger GIS company should be very, very careful about how to adopt the open source idea. For smaller companies, this is much easier.
Now, you suggested before we started that there was actually an event that happened in Germany that helped open things up that we haven't had yet in the United States. I think that's really important for people to hear about.
So you mean about the FOSS-JIS conference?
No, the CCAD part.
Oh, that part, yeah, okay. In Germany in 2002, 2003, there was a major shift in the corporation landscape, and the software CCAD, which was a GIS by the company Siemens, and everybody in Germany thought, oh yeah, Siemens is like IBM. If I choose CCAD and Siemens, nothing will go wrong. But eventually Siemens sold this, and they sold it through an intermediary to Esri. So suddenly the major competitors in the German market, which was Esri and CCAD, were one. So all the customers of CCAD, they were in a strange situation, that until now they have been proud to use this German GIS software, whatever, and now they were supposed to switch over to Esri. So that was a point in time when people had to look into what's going on. And incidentally, that was exactly the same time when there was when the open source idea really took off in my eyes for those early adopters. And that was mainly the map server software. And many of the other ones we have now didn't even exist yet. Like, nobody was thinking about open layers. And internet was just starting to be an option for GIS. So at that point in time, many people, professionals in Germany, started to think about different options and looked at the different options, and one of them was open source. And to understand this, they had to dive into the topic, what is open source? What is this all about, and how does it work, and what does it mean to my work?
And we've never really had anything like that happen in the United States, and maybe that's part of why it still feels like we're still educating people about open source and the difference between open source and open standards and so forth.
Yeah, that's probably true. Probably the best chance to find out about this thing is to go to Denver on the Phosphor-G event. That's a conference and trade fair combination. And I've attended all of them since not the first one. The first one was in 2003 by the map server community. But all the other ones, I attended them. And we were in Canada, South Africa, Sydney, and Spain, and Switzerland. And every place was different attendees. So you always had the core people, that's around maybe 100 or 200 people. Those are the developer folks. I know them for many years now, and it's the only time in the year that we actually meet physically. All the other time, we only meet in IRC and mail and voice over IP and so on. But that's the time where we can meet, and it's usually a good party time. Then there is an increasing number of developers and also managers coming from proprietary vendors of the area where we are. So in Spain, it's more the Spanish people. In South Africa, it's some South African companies I never heard of before, because they're intrigued by what is going on. And then you always have the locals, and the locals are people in a surrounding of 500 kilometers, who just know, oh yeah, I heard about this event there. Let's go and have a look. And usually this is an eye opener, because you get all the information that you need to understand how open source works, and you can actually talk to those people. You can ask them questions. And one question or one comment that comes up every time I am at these conferences, oh, this is incredible. I can't believe it works. Why didn't I learn about this earlier? And I have the same question. I don't know. I've been talking about this for many years, but for some reason, there's always people around who never heard about what open source really is.
Is there some reluctance for people to adopt open source because maybe there's some misinformation about there? Well, yeah, the software is free, but by the time I end up either hiring a developer to customize it the way I want or any other costs on the service side, that it begins to be as costly as proprietary software. I'm sure that's something you get all the time, but I'm curious to your comment.
Yeah, I obviously get this all the time, and I think that it's probably a fault to try to start to think about open source because it doesn't cost anything. That's just one aspect, which is not even true. It obviously does cost to implement the software, and it also costs to implement the software in your organization. If anything you implement involves cost, and even if it's only the cost of your people understanding and learning new things. So the cost idea about open source is just one aspect. And the other aspects are much, much harder to understand. And in the past years, nowadays not so much anymore, but some years back when Microsoft was very, very opposed to Linux and they had lots of marketing money thrown at producing FUD and trying to discredit open source and say it's just a bad option, it's only those strange hackers and you can't rely it and you can only trust a big company that is behind this software. All this kind of thing, I don't think it's being produced so actively nowadays that much anymore, but people still believe in those things that it's like myths. It's like open source and proprietary myths. And they still continue to exist, obviously.
If you could have people do one thing to try to get them beyond those challenges, what would you suggest they do?
Well, one problem there is that everybody's different. That's something I had to learn the hard way. So it's very difficult to say there's this one thing that you need to do to understand how it works.
Okay.
I guess the best thing is to get to chat with some people who already do open source and to find out how it works and what's the difference. I mean, we can really, if you talk to me about this, it pretty quickly I become sort of philosophical. And then I say, this is just a different concept to whatever in the material life we experience. If I have something and I give it to you, I don't have it anymore. Like if you take my bike, I don't have a bike anymore and have to take the bus. There's this little video. It's a 60-second video from the Free Software Foundation. And it explains this really nicely. But if I give you a copy of my software, I don't lose anything. So this whole concept of giving away something and sharing something and still keeping it is very alien to us. Like if we have a cake and we give away some pieces of this cake, it's less cake afterwards. But if I give away my software, I still have the same software. So what's the reason to not give away the software? And this is something that we really need to understand. It takes some time to understand this. And once you understand this, you also lose all this mistrust about why are they doing this? I mean, how can somebody give away software for free? This is crazy. This guy must be, you know, he must be communist. I don't know what. It's really a strange thing. But if you come to think of it, that you get back the more that you give away, and this is almost like a religious idea, and in software it does work. Because if I give away my software and other people can use it and can comment on it and maybe change something because it didn't work right and then give me back what they changed, then my software's increasing, it's getting more. So it's very different to the physical way in which we live. I give away my cake and I get back more. That's great. And to understand this, it just takes time. And understanding it theoretically is one thing, and then experiencing it, that actually you are doing this, that's the next thing. And those two phases, depending on what you've done before, for me it took about half a year. And in 2003, when I changed the business model of my company, then we had around 15, 20 employees. It took me at least 1 year, maybe even 2 years to turn around the business model of my own company. So it's not an easy process, and a lot of this really has to do with understanding the basic principles of open source.
I don't think two suggestions.
Yeah.
Having battled the same challenges that you have in terms of educating people about open source and trying to get them comfortable, the two things that I like to do is to have people go to the open source website and read the annotated definition of what open source means, because it's really important to understand that it's not just the free part and it's not just the sharing part. There's a whole set of properties that this software has that most people are not aware of that can really bring joy to your life, because they allow you to do things that you might otherwise not be able to do. And the other thing I would suggest is download a piece of open source geospatial software and use it. Grab Quantum GIS, for example, and bring up the data that you've already got, and guess what? There's a real desktop GIS piece of software that you can use. And I've done both of these things with students, and a whole new light just opens up for them. And I get responses like, oh my goodness, I can use this to make that map of the ball field in town that I've always wanted to do, and now I can do it at home.
Yeah, that's probably a disadvantage of myself, because I've been doing this so long, it's so natural to me. I actually had trouble to connect to this GoToMeeting software because I don't use Windows. So in some contexts, it's even difficult for me. Still, it happens to me when I give a presentation at a conference that usually I end up on a Microsoft Windows machine, and therefore, I always publish my stuff in PDF, which is sort of a dead-end format because you can't edit it. So whenever I start my presentation, I say, oh, I'm sorry, I have to present on Microsoft Windows and only on PDF. But here is the link to download my presentations, and all of you can have them and can reuse them. And I think that's the other important aspect, that if you start to understand what this open source thing is about, you have to talk to other people so that they also can understand how this works. And well, using this Linux software is just great, because there is a central repository. This is something that Windows people don't understand. There's one place where I can get all the software. So I just give in a command, like a search term. I want to have something that does PDF, and I just enter PDF, and I get a selection of 20 different software packages that I can use to do something with PDF. I can edit it. I can enhance the scripting. I can automatically export it from Wikipedia and whatever. So there's many tools. And I don't have to shop around on different websites and understand different license terms and have different cycles of renewing of license fees and all this kind of thing. I just say, I want to have it. I install it, and 30 seconds later, I can use it. And if I don't like it, I throw it away and take another option. The investment level, to the barrier to actually use this software and test it out and try it out, is so much lower. It's so much easier. And you don't get an evaluation version where you can't do everything, but you just get the whole thing. So I think that is an important aspect. And Adina, you're absolutely right. Just try out the stuff that's out there.
That's a good point to maybe take a question from our attendee. So I'm going to take Paul Okonkwo off of mute. And Paul, if you'd like to ask your question directly, go right ahead. Is Paul there? Well, he had an interesting question, because it leads right into your discussion, which is, it says, does open source GIS software have any security setbacks?
Yeah, that's easy to answer. Like, all the security that you currently get on the web is open source. So that's the answer.
Yeah.
So it's quite the other way around. The interesting thing, to explain this a little more, there is two ways of looking at security, and one is security by obscurity. That means you hide something, and you hide how you do something, and hope that nobody finds out, and you think that is secure. And the other one is security by transparency. You say, look at this, I have this secure thing, and I publish it, how it works, and if anybody finds out that it doesn't work, just holler and let me know. And if you go into serious security backgrounds, then you will always find security by transparency. So all the encryption algorithms are in open source. So open source is not the opposite. Like, there's this word open, which suggests an open door, but that's not really it. Open has other aspects. It's more about the way that this thing is being developed.
Okay, is Razi Kassed there? Razi, if you can ask your question directly, go right ahead. Okay, well, Razi must not have a microphone. His question is, how can I participate in open source GIS if I have very basic programming skills? Where do you suggest I start to learn how to develop software, Java, Python, etc.?
Okay, the open source process is a lot more than just developing software. So beyond developing software, this software has to be tested. It has to be documented. It has to be installed at other places. And this is also a business model, that you get consultant. And to be consultant for open source, you don't really have to be a programmer. You don't need to know how to implement the software. In most cases, the mature software that you can find, for example, as OSGeo projects, you wouldn't want to go into the code at all, because that's experts' work. It's really, really good software. So it's not for something that, you know, the newbie hacker wants to put his hands in. But on the other side, there's many areas where you can do this. And one easy way to get this, and it's really nice because it's also on the web, is OpenLayers. So one thing that you can do is just take OpenLayers, download it. It's just a few megabyte download. Then you get source code, and you get a configuration file, you get an excellent documentation, and you can dive right in. Another area would be to translate the software. So depending on what nationality you are in and what languages you speak, you can go into the software and start to help translate some of those parts. So GVSIG, for example, is a project which has started in Europe, and there is still some work to be done on internationalizing it so that all the messages that you see are really in English language. In most other cases, obviously, the main language is English, so in the area we're talking about now in the U.S., it's probably not that big a problem.
Right, right. I'm going to let Guido Stein ask a question. Guido, if you're there, go right
sure.
ahead.
You know what? One of the – can you hear me?
Yeah, you bet.
Oh, okay, sure. So one of the things you brought up was licenses and how proprietary licenses can be confusing. Also, the licenses in the open space are also confusing, and I'm thinking of GPL 3 and how, you know, if you want to use the tools in your own projects, if you use GPL 3 tools, that creates sort of issues for your ability to profit on those or to how you put your code back out there into the world.
Well, that's basically two questions. The first question, or the first idea, is there is a difference between proprietary licenses and open source licenses, and I think again it is the transparency of the open source licenses that make them valuable. Mm-hmm. So if you look at GPL3 and you really want to understand it, I'm pretty sure there's about 1,000 blogs and 10,000 emails and 20,000 explanations out there. So if you really want to understand how it works, you can understand how it works. But on the other side, if you have a proprietary license, it just changes on the whim of the vendor. And there is no proprietary license by different vendors that is even similar. They're all different. So what we do usually when we see this kind of thing, where you have to click through and then say, yeah, I accept, is we just scroll down and, you know, we don't read this. But if you're really intrigued and want to understand it, then there's a whole series of information out there in the web that explains what are the advantages and disadvantages of GPL3. And the whole process that has led up to GPL3 is an open, transparent process that you can follow up in the web.
So if I might have a follow-up, specifically, I've been trying to hold a retirement party for certain exchange files and trying to suggest an adoption of things like Spatial Light. And the feedback I get a lot when I talk about products like that is that there's tools for Spatial Light or adopting this new format, but the problem is a lot of people are not sure about dealing with those tools because a lot of them are GPL3 specifically.
Yeah. Well, I don't have a problem with GPL3. Initially, when I started with this open source and free software thing, I was a proponent of GPL. That was in that time was 2. It was just moving from 1 to 2.
Might you explain what GPL3 is to those who are listening who aren't aware?
Well, it's just a copyleft license, which means that you give away the software and you inherently tie into the software the license. That means that if anybody else wants to use this software, he has to, and change the software and gives it away, he has to publish it under the same license. So in some cases, people have talked about this being a viral license because it infects all other software that it gets into contact with. In my perception, this is FUD, because instead of being a virus, it's more like a vaccine to prevent the proprietary virus to enter the software. So that's the very short version. And just to make sure that people get a general understanding, there's also other licenses. There's currently some 40 or 50 licensed by the Open Source Initiative, and they are copyleft licenses, and there are more permissive licenses like the MIT or BSD licenses, where it basically just says, oh, do whatever you want with it and use it as is and don't sue us if it doesn't work. So that's the broad range of licenses, from more complex GPL ones with copyleft ideas in them and more permissive ones where they say, okay, this is more or less just take it and maybe you can mention me if you use it elsewhere, but basically just do what you want with it. And over time, I have grown more fond of the latter part, because it's just easier to use this and don't have to worry about this GPL thing, how you can combine it with other licenses.
Great. Well, thanks, Guido, for those questions. I got one more question because we're approaching the end of our time. And this is from Amit Chatterjee. He's in India. He says, my question is based on my experience here in India. There is a serious question regarding scalability of open source GIS that we are finding here. While Indian government agencies are rapidly deploying spatial solutions and experimenting with open source solutions, whenever they are choosing spatial deployment in statewide or district-wide enterprise GIS, they're shifting to proprietary systems. Is it the same everywhere in the world, or is this specific to India?
Well, I was in Hyderabad at the beginning of this year at the Global Work Conference on Mapping, and I think it really is an Indian issue, and I must be, if I'm honest, I don't really understand it. In Germany, we have this Inspire regulation that makes every public administration publish their data openly, not openly like in giving it away for free, but at least providing the infrastructure that you can access the data. And 90% of this deployment, and you have to think about cadastral base map for an area with 450 million people, all this information is being published, 90% of it is published by using open source software. So here the scalability end is absolutely on the open source side. I think that in India there is, we have a different issue there. They don't think about cost so much, because you can get the whole AutoCAD suite for $1.50 on a DVD, so it's not really an issue. And I'm not proposing that piracy is a good thing, quite the contrary. But the idea that open source, you have to use it because it's less cost, is not that much an issue in India. So in India there is other things. And I think maybe it's also a cultural thing that people think that if they buy something with a big brand name on it, it will be more reliable or something like this.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. I'm going to take one more question from the audience. Ilya Rosenfeld, are you there? Would you like to ask a question?
I'm not sure if I can be heard. I'm on the computer.
Can you hear me? Go ahead.
Very good, thank you.
Hi, Ilya.
Hey, how you doing?
Excellent, thanks.
Good to chat with you again. We met in Vancouver last week. It was a great time. The time approaching again. So my question is, I think for the benefit of the group also, and for my own enlightenment, I wanted to raise again the question of enforcement of these licenses, and to ask you perhaps to tell us what means really exist to enforce open source licenses.
Yeah, that's an interesting aspect, and just because we're running out of time, I'll keep this short. There have been enforcement of especially GPL licenses where people have sold products containing software licensed as GPL. And in general, the rule is if there is nobody who notices it, nothing will happen. If it is noticed and you have a lawyer, then in general you can get through this and I don't know how do you call this, recompensation and things like that. But in general, enforcement on the open source side of things is way less important than on the vendor and proprietary side, because you don't earn anything by suing somebody, so there's no reason to do this.
Well, Arnulf, I want to really thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're actually on holiday, so I really appreciate you spending a little bit of time talking about OSGEO with us and for answering all of our questions. We really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks a lot. I'm honored to have been on you.
Yeah, good. And thanks to all of you, our listeners and viewers. We will hopefully see you on the next Directions On Point or another Directions Media webinar. Be sure to tell a friend about Directions. Take care. Bye-bye.